Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Critically Acclaimed, the movie review podcast, where, hey, we're doing interviews again. Whee! My name is William Bibbiani. I am a film critic. I write for The Wrap. I write for The Film Verdict. Everybody calls me Bibbs. My co-host Whitney couldn't make it here today, but I do have someone to talk to, and I am extremely excited about this. We are here with the director, co-writer, star, editor. I assume you did the catering as well. The person behind one of the most talked about independent movies in quite a long time, The People's Joker. This is Vera Drew. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me, Bibbs.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, you know me so well. Thank you so much.
So happy to be here.
I'm happy to be here too. I remember hearing about this movie, The People's Joker, when it debuted at the Toronto International Film Festival, and then there was a bit of a kerfuffle, and Warner Brothers didn't seem super happy about it, and it seemed as though there's a chance this movie could not be seen. This could be the new Day the Clown Cried, except the clown's actually crying in this one. I actually never seen that. Well, I guess theoretically, it would be weird if in the Day the Clown Cried, the clown never cried, but I guess I'll give Jerry Lewis some credit. I know this isn't why we're here, and I really want to talk about all the incredible creative decisions made about this film, but can you give us, first off, I want to know, in your own words, because the movie is so many things, what is The People's Joker to you, and for people who might not have heard about it yet, and give us a little, just a little bit on the journey that got us here.
Sure. The People's Joker is a queer coming-of-age comic book parody about an unfunny transgender clown named Joker who finds love and finds herself, all while forming an illegal comedy theater in a town called Gotham City. And it's exactly what I just said. It's a Joker parody, and it's super autobiographical, very much based on my life. Like, I've been doing comedy most of my life, and to varying degrees of success, and this movie was kind of just processing what it was like sort of coming out in the alt comedy scene. And it kind of just started as a joke, and I took it a little too far, I think.
it's so rare, you know, so much of the superhero cinema that we get the occasional independent film, but mostly it's very corporatized. And it's extremely rare to see, even in the good superhero movies that we get, one that feels personal in some way. And to not only make that personal superhero movie, but to explicitly use the iconography and in a parodic way, but the characters that we're familiar with, it feels so daring to me. Like, I was watching this and I was thinking about like the way that like Kenneth Anger would like reappropriate like pop songs through a very queer lens in a very challenging way in Scorpio Rising. And I'm just thinking about the way that our lives are basically written by corporations. Like, we're constantly absorbing the art that they make. That is the stuff that gets mass produced and mass advertised. Why was it so important to you to tell your story through the lens of Batman characters?
Sorry if you hear cats fighting in the background.
Oh, I'm going to have the exact same problem over here. This is not, we're both cat people. It's fine.
It's kind of like what you said. Like, I really do think it's kind of shoved down our throats that these characters are sort of like our modern myths. And I think a lot of the times that's said, it's just sort of like, you know, PR justification to like keep churning these movies out. But like, I actually like think I do believe that like these kind of are the closest things, at least like in cinema itself, like is kind of the closest thing we have to mythology, like as like an American culture. So like, I think like just sort of academically, it seemed like a good idea. And like, I think, you know, like it is just sort of like, we're surrounded by it. Like, if we have to be sort of like subjected to seeing these things on billboards all the time, if it's literally like the only movies that play in theaters, like, and if these are like myth belongs to the people, and myth is about like coming of age and understanding yourself. So like, really anybody should be able to play with these toys, in my opinion. And I really wanted to kind of go out of my way to do it in a way that was that all fell under fair use and parity. Like it's funny just like talking about this movie and usually like just talking about like the legal challenges it's faced, because like to me it always just was like kind of like Scary Movie or like Naked Gun or something, like that level of parody. But yes, like with this like super honest, you know, autobiographical story that only I could tell, and that's really like where the fair use of it all comes in. Like I really have used these characters to understand my queerness, and I feel a very personal connection with them. Like when I saw Batman Forever as a kid, like my dad took me to see it when I was like 6 or whatever, and like it was one of the first times I realized I was trans. Like just seeing Nicole Kidman on screen and seeing the way Batman looks at her and like how she looks, I'm like, why do I feel represented as a 6-year-old boy? So yeah, I don't know. I just think like these things were just very interwoven into my DNA, and Joker is just canonically a very queer character too, and I feel like that hasn't been explored, and I wanted to, you know, provide commentary on that through my own personal experience, I guess.
It's been interesting to see the Joel Schumacher Batman movies kind of reclaimed, I think, by
Yeah, I'm so
younger
stoked.
people who grew up with them. And I'm not a huge fan of Batman and Robin. I don't think it's edited like terribly well, but God knows I appreciate the effort that went into it. And I feel like, although you can see elements of the Adam West Batman series and a lot of the other movies, even the Christopher Nolan films pay homage a little bit. I feel like he's understanding that there is a certain glee in the outsider aspect of Batman. The Tim Burton ones was there was a darkness in having a dual nature, and in the Joel Schumacher ones, it's like, no, it's awesome. We get to wear whatever we want. We get to have all the sex. Like we're having the best time in this neon wonderland. It's like Gotham City, but what if Vegas?
Well, that was, I mean, I, 'cause like I've always loved, like for me, I love Batman and Robin, but I kind of do agree with you just from like I came up as an editor, so it's impossible for me to watch movies that are paced bad, and that is one that I think is paced very weird. But I kind of also love how it's paced, just because like I don't know, it's like it should be a midnight movie or something at this point, like Batman and Robin. But for
I
me
feel
it
like if it
really
was like a
always was
parody of the
Batman.
film, if it was like a Turkish movie and it was the exact same
Yes.
movie, everyone would love it and say it's the greatest thing in the world.
Oh, totally. No. And I mean, I even feel that way to, about Batman Forever to some extent too. Like that one obviously isn't as campy, but like if you dialed up the drama just a little bit in it, it would almost be like Twin Peaks or something. Like it has like a very like operatic, like a beautiful operatic thing to it. And I don't know, like I love the Nolan, you know, Batmans, like to some degree, but they're definitely not my favorite. Like I really don't like, I don't really love it when like people take these characters and they're like, I gotta do something realistic. I gotta like make the, I gotta put them in the real world. Like to me, like as a lifelong comic book fan, like I love reading comics because they're fantastical and colorful, and like you said, like people wear whatever they want, and like I don't know, like it's, I don't need that to be grounded. And I think, you know, within that space, like within camp and colorful stuff, like you can find a lot of truth still. You can find a lot of grounded emotion and realism and things when you're just fully leaning into being silly and colorful and really, really fucking gay, which was like really kind of one of the things that I really took away from Schumacher's filmography. Like it's impossible for me not to think about his movies as just like expensive art, gay art films.
And then I would say the majority, at least the majority, definitely qualify. Like they're just it would it's so rare. Like you don't get a lot of filmmakers working within the studio system who are able to bring that much queerness to the fore. And it was done in such a way that a lot of people somehow missed it. Like some people like The Lost Boys. There's nothing gay about that. Have you seen The Lost Boys?
Yes, yeah, no, I was listening to the theme song from The Lost Boys right before this podcast actually,
Nice.
and I was in like a laughing fit because I was just thinking about like that being one of the biggest movies ever and just how like it could only be made by a gay person. Like I think the reason like that stuff flew under the radar is because it's like it's just like good genre filmmaking. Like I don't know, like I feel like the conversations around like representation like always get really bogged down in like on-screen representation and like showing queer characters and stuff. And that I guess has some value in it, but I feel like a lot of the times those characters just end up being like straight. They're very straight for like
Yeah.
characters that are supposed to appear queer.
Yeah. Non-threatening, I think,
And
would be the air quotes version of that. Yeah.
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 And like certainly never they never make queer villains anymore because like you know that'd be like a minefield to kind of walk through.
It's pretty rare,
But
yeah.
to me it's like I don't know, and now having just met so many other like amazing queer filmmakers who like make genre films like this past year, like while we were taking it out the People's Joker out to festivals, like it's just really like changed how I thought about like why media is the way it is and like why representation actually is important, like how it can be implemented. It's like just like we like Hollywood needs to just start hiring all these amazing queer genre filmmakers and not just like the queer ones too, just like there's just so many fucking people from like quote unquote marginalized identities that would never be given like a blank check to make a genre movie that would knock it out of the park. And I don't know, like 90s movies just did that. I don't know why. Maybe everybody was just on coke or something.
Well, that's probably true. I feel as though we go in cycles. If you look at the history of Hollywood, mainstream Hollywood, where it goes to this incredibly generic, studio-driven, safe, blockbustery era, and then they drive that into the ground. And then the only thing that people will respond to now is something that feels more personal, which is how you go from like, the 1960s giant Hello Dolly musicals to the Easy Rider, Godfather era, where all of a sudden the stuff that people are interested in feels like genuine human drama. And we've again, it's a bit of an exaggeration to say that all we've had is superhero movies for so long, but they've been dominating the discourse for so much.
Yeah.
And they eat, and this is by design. They're all the same. The reason why Black Panther stood out so much is that it's at least it had this Afrofuturist take and it had some real themes to it. But the majority of the movies were following a house aesthetic and were afraid to really get into meaningful themes. And I think we're just desperate to feel something real now. But maybe we
Yeah,
can
I
only
mean,
do that
just
through superheroes. Like maybe we need to like get these training wheels, like it's okay. We'll get some
God,
superhero movies.
I hope we can do it with things other than superheroes because
Yeah.
I definitely got my superhero fill on this movie. Like I there might be some like comic books that you know I'd love to adapt in like an official capacity someday, but like to me like I don't know, but I mean to your point like it is just I think the thing that is making it stale is that whole like in-house feel. And yeah, like I don't know, superhero movies aren't the only thing dominating pop culture right now, but I feel like they did influence everything. So, like the whole cinematic universe idea, like
Yeah.
just how many, like, and the things that have cinematic universes now too, I'm just like, whoa. And
Yeah.
like, I don't know, I also really, that was something I wanted to play with in my movie too, is just like, 'cause I love like multiverse stuff. Like, I'm very witchy and very, you know, the People's Joker really was just like a giant chaos magic ritual. Like, and I don't know, like I think there's a lot to explore with like other dimensions and like varying levels of consciousness with these characters. Like you can do that and like it doesn't just have to be like, oh, well, this is the thing that like connects all these movies together is like, look, all the Spider-Mans are together or
Well,
whatever.
it feels like, and it's funny because we had, I think, a genuinely great multiverse movie. It won Best Picture, Everything Everywhere All at Once, where it actually did something
Oh,
interesting and
totally.
personal with that concept. But so many of, the mainstream blockbuster type things that are trying to play with that, it's basically, hey, look at all this IP we own. And I look at the People's Joker and I see the way that you are combining distinct influences and characters. Like there's a revelation about Jason Todd in the movie and how he actually connects to another character that we know from the comics. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, here's someone who isn't just like just throwing it in there because, hey, I know that version of Bane, but because they're actually like serving like a narrative and thematic function. And
Yeah.
when you were telling your story, did you start autobiographically and then say who fits in this role, or did you go the other way around and try to take all the Batman characters and figure out who they'd be?
The former initially for sure. Like I the original idea for this movie really was just kind of like a series of like essays that were maybe going to be like either a one woman show or like a queer body horror experimental thing. And it was really centered around this like this drag queen who was physically addicted to irony was the idea. And like in developing that, like I became really obsessed with just the idea of like cancel culture and like everybody like talking like comedians talking about how they're censored and then like selling out billions, like making billions of dollars doing comedy. And like thinking about like what if there was this reality where like comedy was actually illegal and it was heavily controlled by the state and like was almost like this arm of our nuclear industrial complex or whatever. So those were like the original ideas. And then in I'd say like it was yeah like March 2020, like right when everything was starting to shut down because of COVID, Todd Phillips was in the news kind of talking about woke culture and how you know like he doesn't make comedies anymore because it's too hard to not offend people or whatever, which on some level I totally get that argument just because like we do live in super reactive times. Like I get called transphobic on Twitter sometimes and like I mean I might be transphobic but it's all internalized. So I mean like we do live in times where like I think people get very emotional when they find subject matter offensive or whatever, but what a thing to say as somebody who just made like this huge, like monumental comic book movie that I loved too. Like Todd Phillips Joker, just as a lifelong comic book fan, like seeing a comic book movie that talked about class struggle and mental health. And like, this is a character who like wanted to be a comedian and like, but was just everybody was keeping him down. His family system failed him. His you know, every social structure has failed this person. And that really resonated with me as a trans woman. So yeah, like that inspiration. And then also when Todd was making those comments in the news, my co-writer Brie LaRose actually commissioned me to re-edit Todd Phillips Joker. And I used to work with Everything Is Terrible. Like I used to do a lot, and I still do sometimes video remixes and stuff. I'm trying to move out of it just because I got a little bit of heat on me now. It's something that I've always liked doing. So I earnestly started doing that because again, it was COVID. Like I had nothing better to do. So I was like, I'll just make like a big weird experimental, you know, found footage movie and I'll show it to like my five friends and we'll
How
all have a
would this
laugh and then I'll
how would a re-edit of Todd Phillips Joker be a found footage? Like what was your take? Like what was the idea behind that?
Well, so it was basically, I mean, like it was basically going to be the emotional arc that you see in the People's Joker, which is kind of, you know, like I really did take Todd Phillips' Joker and like transpose that into like a hero's journey type narrative, where it's not really like watching a descent as much as it's like watching somebody rise, I guess, was the kind of shift there. And like in making the like remix, like it was just originally gonna be very experimental, like with deep faking my face on Joaquin Phoenix's head and like, you know, I was like removing backgrounds and adding Joel Schumacher things. And it was just this very organic process of like making something and then realizing too, like, what am I doing? Like I'm spending all this time in Batman land, like making something that I'll never be able to publicly show. Like I had wanted to make a movie my entire life. Like, I knew I was a filmmaker before I knew I was a girl. Like, my earliest memories, like, were wanting to make movies and be a director. So it was like, what if I just make a movie? Like, what if I make a Joker parody that is like circling all these like kind of queer coming of age aesthetics and ideas that I'm sort of putting together. And then, yeah, sort of took those that drag queen idea and transposed that onto this. And I went back to Brie LaRose, my co-writer, and I was like, you got me into this mess, so will you help me like write a script? And we did, and we wrote kind of a beautiful script that I think was always impossible to make. You know, like every step of the way we'd be like, what are we doing? Like, how are we gonna? There's an entire scene where two characters are like breaking up and then Batman's chasing them in a Batmobile. Like, how are we gonna pull this off? But we just yes anded each other to the very end, and then yeah, like had this beautiful script for a Joker parody that was also super, super autobiographical in my life. And like I'm sorry, I'll
You're
let you
fine.
talk in one
No, no, no.
second.
They're here to hear you. They hear me talk all the time. But you brought up something. You brought up something that I think is
Go
actually, and
ahead.
that this is this might sound like a hyperbolic comparison, but I think it's apt. Orson Welles once said that the reason he was able to make Citizen Kane is because he wasn't experienced enough in filmmaking to know he couldn't.
Yes. No, that is okay. Thank you. For the first and last time anybody's ever compared me to Orson Welles. But I will take it because like that was definitely the case. Like that was, you know, I'd come up in like alt comedy television, like as an editor. So like I knew a lot of like technical stuff about like making things, and I had been making video most of my life. But when it came to actually like grabbing this by the horns, and like this always felt like an impossible movie to make. Like literally up until like 2 weeks ago when I was still finishing the mix again, because we had to change, we have a whole new, the whole movie. If you saw this movie in film festivals, like you should go see it again because it's a whole new movie.
How much has
Like
changed?
it's,
I was curious about that because I heard that there was some work done. Like how different is the experience?
pretty much the whole soundtrack has changed. Like there's and because of that, the pacing of the movie changed a lot. Like it's around the same length, but I did a whole re-edit of it. And yeah, like since TIFF, like the cut we showed at TIFF was such a fresh paint job. Like we are it's night and day. Like it really, the movie was never done. Like the movie was never done until like 2 weeks ago, really. Like, and because of and that was because I didn't know what I was doing, and I was so ambitious. Like I just wanted to tell this kind of huge story, and thankfully, you know, like in the process of like when we while we were writing it, I was able to assemble a team of like amazing animators and artists, many of whom have no like film experience either, and like are just animators and artists, like or like visual artists, like people who don't. Who just make art. Like it kind of became this big, beautiful DIY community art project that I was helming. And that was cool. And yeah, like very unmanageable the whole time. Like I never thought it was going to take me 4 years to make this, but now when I watch it, I can kind of see why. Like I have no idea how I made this movie. When I watch it, I'm like, what the fuck? Like, and yeah, because it's just also loaded with jokes, and like I just really went crazy, and I broke every single rule that kind of had been shoved down my throat in film school and throughout my career in the edit bay. And I just kind of blissfully cashed in every favor I could to finish it, and acted like there was a microchip in my brain that would explode if I didn't. And yeah, thank God I did.
You talked about some of like the animators and everyone that you brought in, and this movie has a very hybrid aesthetic. You've got 2D animation, 3D animation. It looks like it looks like the abandoned amusement park was like a hand-done diorama. Was there rhyme
That
or
was
reason to
literally.
Yeah.
That was I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, no, no,
I'll
please. No,
let you
no.
finish.
Talk,
That
please.
amusement park was a 2D painting. Like
Oh,
it was
wow.
a flat, just crazy, like beautiful, like it's by this artist A.T. Pratt, who makes like this gorgeous like psychedelic art that I don't know, it's kind of, I don't know if he'd like this description, but it reminds me a lot of like DMT imagery. It's just like a lot of checkers but swirl checkers and swirls and geometric lines and stuff. And yeah, he was one of the artists that kind of came out of the woodwork when I like announced, like I used to have a web series that really only lasted like 3 or 4 episodes, but it was called Hot Topics with Vera Drew, which is the only express the only show. Oh, I fucked it up. Don't edit it, because I want the shame, because I've said it so many times that I should be able to get the tagline right now. Hot Topics is the only web series with the express purpose of getting Vera Drew sponsored by Hot Topic, and it
Nice.
was just this desperate attempt to get sponsored by Hot Topic. But it was on that show that I announced that, you know, my friend and I were writing this movie. And at that point, it was still very much in this experimental phase. Like, I knew it was starting to become a movie and less like a re not a going to be a remix movie exclusively. But and that was just because the story, it became more of a story and less of just this like loose amorphous thing into like actually adapting my life. And so putting that call out, I was just like, if there's any artists or animators or actors or really anybody that wants to help us make this, like visit thepeoplesjoker.com and join today. And I really was only expecting like a few people to respond, but it was like it was hundreds. Like it was crazy. It was just, I woke up to like a lot of people that wanted to not only see this very, very gay Batman parody, but like wanted to make it. And yeah, again, a lot of them were artists who didn't work in film or TV or anything like that. And I, you know, A.T. Pratt is one of them. Like when I saw his art, and this was really what the process was, is I just saw what people's like aesthetics were. And I think that was kind of when the idea really took shape, that it was like, okay, this can be like a big mixed media thing, like Natural Born Killers or like Pink Floyd's The Wall or something, like, but you know, also Hedwig and the Angry Inch. Like it should be like this one woman show set in this, like, you know, like you're flipping through channels or having a drug trip or something and seeing all these different aesthetics. And so yeah, and it was really just like kind of going down the list and being like, okay, this person makes cool geometric weird psychedelic art. I think the amusement park set that we wrote would look great for that. And then, you know, that was an instance where like I got back this like 2D painting that was like flat, and I was like, oh, I didn't really think about this. How am I going to use this as a background? Like I have multiple scenes in this in this location. Like, you know, there's a lot, we're seeing it throughout the movie. And I don't know, like coming up in TV, like if that had been like a vendor or something that I had been working with, like you know, we would have like sent the art back and been like, this isn't right. But like in this process, like it really was like, okay, like let's see what we can do with this. And we turned it into like a 3D model that, as you said, like kind of feels like a diorama or like summer stock theater and stuff. And that was like one of the first kind of big aesthetic decisions that I made, was just like, yeah, it's fine if like the world looks sort of fake. And like it has like a different layers of fakeness. And we kind of, I think there is like a there was like an intelligence to how that was arranged and like where different aesthetics are coming in at certain times. And like, you know, like Salem Hughes made our Batmobile and our Batcave, which is very like N64 or like Doom 64 aesthetic. And that was because like Salem just makes that kind of art. And it was like, okay, cool, we'll just make all the Batman toys look like a Batman video game, and that'll be how it looks at those points in the movie. So yeah, it was like a very intuitive process. And I was very lucky to just be surrounded by all these talented people. And I think also on some level, I was lucky that I just had been exploited and underpaid for so much of my career, because like this could have so easily been a movie that I did that with this team that I had assembled, but I really wanted everybody involved not only to at least feel compensated or be compensated in most cases, but I wanted everybody to feel like it was their movie. And yeah, which is why talking about it is always so weird, and why I'm always constantly like apologizing, going like, "Oh, sorry for talking too much," because it really is like in my head, it's this big, kind of thing that was always sort of bigger than just me, even though my dumb face is on camera the entire time and it's like
I'm not going to
painfully.
let you get away with that. There's nothing wrong with your face. The but it is a, but it, it and it is a collaborative medium, of course it is, but this is a very personal story, and I was struck by two kind of disparate elements of the autobiographical part of this. And one is and I admire your confidence, because you're not afraid to actually build yourself up, because not only is this a superhero story, but you also use the framework of a lot of celebrity biopics. You've got the Walk the Line opening, where you're thinking about your passage before you go on. You got the Man on the Moon story, with him like playing as a kid and his parents don't get it. Andy Kaufman, not you, obviously, because that would be it. But
No, I got
but
it.
and then at the end, you know, screw it. Also, you're a chosen one. That right there, I do not have that level of self-confidence. Like, what is how
Yeah.
was what, did that come naturally? Did you have to did you have to will that into being?
You know, there is this line in the movie where it comes when the sort of Messiah arc is sort of fully finally explored explicitly, where one character says, this is pretty I don't know, like up its own ass and like overconfident, and like that to me is just what comedy always is. Like
Yeah.
comedy is like 100% pretentious. That's the line we use in the movie. Like it's there's a level of pretension to comedy, and especially when you're being sincere. Like I feel like I feel very naked when I watch this movie with people. It's why like I don't really watch it that much anymore. Like I watched it a lot on our festival run, mostly just because like it was cool to like see all the jokes land and stuff. But like there are so many things in it that are, yes, like super deeply personal. And then, yeah, like I think specifically with the like Messiah narrative, like coming into my transness felt like a very spiritual thing for me. And it still is. Like I'm sort of in this new chapter of it. But, and I think a lot of trans people have almost like a Messiah complex, because like you literally do, you are dead and reborn.
Yeah.
Like transition really does feel like resurrection in this way. So yeah, I wanted to explore that specifically and pretentiously. And I don't know, like I think like the I've been doing comedy since I was like 13. I started at Chicago's Second City like during high school, and it really, you know, saved my ass, like my adolescence, like having just this beautiful group of like friends and freaks. And I would take the train to the city, and you know, I also qualify all this with I don't think parents should let their kids start doing comedy that young, because it 100% I mean, there's way worse things that you could do, but comedy can often lead to those things, as they did in my case. And
I mean, you literally break the fourth wall in this movie to tell people never to date a comedian.
yeah, and I mean that is a rule that I continue to keep breaking, and need to. There's so many lessons in this movie that I'm constantly still learning, and that's one of them. But yeah, I mean, like comedy for me was always this space where like I could explore queerness, and it was a safe haven for me for expression. And you know, I was mostly like a sketch and improv person, but I also did stand up for a few years, and like I only ever did stand up in a dress, and that was when I was a quote unquote straight man. You know, like it was
Who could have seen it coming?
very, yes, exactly. Yeah. I mean, everybody knew before I did, as I think is the case with a lot of people. And yeah, like I think part of that was because I was really stuck in this irony state for years of like, yes, having this outlet of expression, but also kind of embodying femininity in a monstrous way or in a self-deprecating way, or like in a way that kind of was just like high concept self-harm or something. And like, I really like wanted to process all of that because I don't, to my knowledge, there's really nothing that does process that. I mean, like the King of Comedy comes close. Joker 2019 comes close, and like I also think Man on the Moon is not a perfect movie, but it's such a beautiful experience to watch because like I feel like it is just this window into this life of somebody who's like just the most unique person who's ever lived and like is just this beautiful freak that was only supposed to be here for like a very short amount of time. Like he never fit in at any given point. Like even when he was fitting in as Latka, he was like, he hated it. He fucking hated being the Fonzie of that show. And like, I don't know. There's just a lot of beautiful themes of authenticity and spirituality that I think can be explored when you're looking at comedy and queerness in this way and kind of seeing how they overlap and come together. And I don't know, it just felt very, it felt very appropriate, like really kind of leaning into to the, especially like in a movie that like I can't stress enough, like I mean, we don't have any fart jokes in this movie, which is actually kind of shocking, but like it's a very rude, vulgar, silly movie, like with lots of bright colors and it's but it also really does have like a serious message and point to it. And I think I felt comfortable getting away with that just because I don't know, we live in this time where comedy is treated like the comedians of our day are treated like philosopher kings and like it's silly.
No, you mentioned this, that's a line in the movie. You talk about how, it's completely backwards. We treat our comedians like they're the truth tellers who are guiding us philosophically, and we treat the politicians like a bunch of celebrities, and it makes no sense. That's
No, it
completely backwards.
absolutely doesn't. Like the idea that like our president needs to like be funny or like post memes is like the scariest thing to me in the world. Like especially
Who
like just all
cares?
that's going on in the world right now. Like it's
I don't
yeah,
need
grow
with the
up.
whole thing about, oh, I want a president I can have a beer with. No, I want a president who's too busy to have a beer with me. I want a president who's
Yeah.
doing their
Oh my
job.
God. I don't want anybody in charge of anything to be able to have a beer with me. The way I drink beer, no. yeah. I should not like I just don't. And I don't know. I think I really wanted to like I think the freedom we had with like telling the story through this sort of like parody fair use lens is like Joker is a very fucked up character who like is like a chaos agent of chaos, and like I love the Joker, like I love the fucking Grant Morrison Joker that is like this bizarre queer like grabbing Batman's ass like interdimensional vibe, like he's like Bugs Bunny or something but like evil, like that's my Joker. I don't know, like I think like we're able to sort of like look at the political system and like just where we're actually at in America right now in a way that like a lot of these movies are not able to just because of it's coming from my dirtbag edgelord perspective.
But if the Joker is an agent of chaos, and it's something they talk about all the time, the Joker represents chaos. Like, Batman represents order. He's a vigilante who beats up mentally ill people. How is that order? Like, it really depends on
Totally.
your interpretation of the Joker depends on what system the Joker is trying to break down, which is why one of my favorite versions of the Batman still is the Adam West version, because the Adam West Batman was ultra conservative, extremely family friendly, would always put a coin in the meter, even in an emergency. And all of these villains, some of them were more messed up than others, but most of them were just people trying to live outside the lines. There's this great bit in one of the Frank Gorshin episodes where he's got a they all of the supervillains had like hot girlfriends, which I always thought was interesting. Like, it just, no, they're having sex. We promise you. They're the ones having sex. Batman isn't. The Riddler is. And he had a girlfriend who was like, and he was like, we're gonna do this heist and I'm gonna leave a riddle. And she's like, what if you just didn't leave a riddle and got away with it? And Frank Gorshin stops and looks at her like, who are you? We're here for the crime is incidental. We're here to be weird outsiders. That's the point. And I
Totally.
think that for me, I was watching that. I was watching this movie and about how the weird outsiders in your movie are, and they commit a few crimes. They do kill a guy once, but it's always in service of, like Batman in your movie. He's a fascist capitalist sexual predator in your
Yes.
movie.
I'm glad you
Like,
said
yeah, well, he is. See,
it.
and that's
Yeah,
an and
gosh.
that's a weird interpretation in some ways, because I feel like, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with The Seduction of the Innocent, the Frederick Wortham book in the 1950s that said that comic books, amongst other things, were corrupting our youths, and that you know, Wonder Woman was full of bondage. To be fair, he was right about that. And that Batman
Yes.
and Robin is going to
A
turn your
tone
kids gay.
complimentary.
Because, but he says, like, Batman and Robin are going to turn your kids gay because they're gay creeps. And I feel like engaging with the idea that Batman is not wholesome, and also that Batman might not be a wholesome figure sexually, is something that I think we've been kind of afraid to deal with because of that legacy. And here's a movie that is doing it very directly. Were you concerned about that tightrope walk? I mean, because there's definitely the toxic elements in this movie that you confront.
Yeah, thanks for talking about it, because I don't usually get to talk about this aspect of it. So I mean, I was talking to lawyers at the script stage, you know, of writing this. Like, it really was, I that level of thought was going into it. All of those lawyers were have asked to remain anonymous, and pro they were all pro bono, off the
Wow.
record people, but I did have guidance. And it was very good guidance, and I followed that guidance to the T. I mean, like, a lot of it was just like coming up with your own character designs, and again, just being like really honest, and like, it's like my perspective, you know, like, we made it Jared Leto's Joker because like it was based off of my abusive ex, and like
Yeah.
Jared Leto's Joker has that vibe, and you know, so, but one of the things that they specifically said, you know, like, I remember I was on a call with my first lawyer, and he was like, this is not legal advice. This is just me as a friend telling you, like, I don't think you should, I think you should abandon this like Batman Predator storyline. Just because I think that is like, that will, if you are trying to do this, like, without infringing on DC's brand, like, follow these other guidelines. But if you do this one, I think you'll just piss off DC because they
You'll
don't
poke
like
the
it when
bear.
Batman's gay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think on some level that might be why things got flagged like that at TIFF, is because we do, you know, we talk about a toxic romance between Batman and Robin in this movie, and which sounds trite, but like, we do it in a way that is like coming from this place of like, you know, I don't know, like, I'm a abuse survivor, like a lot of my friends are, like, it's coming from a place of like real honesty, and like, what would actually happen if somebody was working with like 12 to 16-year-olds every night in the middle of the night, and like, you know, like, forget the even like toxic romance side of it, like, it's an inappropriate dynamic either way. And I think the comics really do go out of their way to explore that sometimes. Like, I mean, the Jason Todd arc is that to a T. And like, I think like the Robins that come after too, like, it's more so, it's always Batman sort of processing like, why the fuck did I keep doing this? Like, why, like, look at what I turned Dick into, and look at what happened to Jason. You know, I always thought of our Batman in the People's Joker, who I've always just called Batsy, because like, he doesn't really feel like Batman to me. Like, he feels like Batman has gone just completely corporatized, and like, not only let himself go physically, like, he just looks like a little fat cop in the movie, which was very intentional, like kind of a snidely whiplash
He's got the
little bean
mustache.
man.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. But we really wanted to, I don't know, like he's like a Batman who probably maybe what like did have some good things and virtues at one point in his life, but like he fell off at some point or another. And I don't know, I wanted to talk about that in a way that was grounded and honest and sincere, and actually like processing what it's like to be exploited by people in power. And I don't know, the and then just the on a lighter note, like the thing you said about like, because I've gotten some shit mostly just at Q and A's and on Twitter. Like I really am just slowly not going to be on Twitter anymore because it's
That's
hell.
probably good advice in general, yeah.
Yeah. But I've gotten shit for like making just a movie with this many queer villains, and even just people going like, do you really think like making the Joker trans was a good idea? Like this is a murdering psychopathic clown. And I mean, not only do I just love queer villains, like in general. Like I love the queer coded ones that are problematic, like, you know, fucking Scar and Jafar and, you know, all the Disney ones. Like Ursula
Sure.
just is divine.
Of course.
Like I love that shit. But I also live and move through a society that villainizes me every day. Like the day my trailer dropped, I can't tell you how many people called me a fucking groomer. You know, like
Yeah.
I get politicized and villainized just for being me. So yeah, I mean, like I really wanted to, I'm using these like Batman villains as a composite to really just talk about what it feels like to not only be like a queer quote unquote freak on the margins of society, but what it's like to be an artist on the margins of society,
Yeah.
because I've been there. I have a lot of friends who are still there, and like it is like it does often feel like you're a villain, and like it does, you know, and you do have to break a few laws sometimes, and you do
Well,
have to start your own comedy theater and shit like that.
the laws that get broken, especially in this movie, it may be not the murder, but for the most part, it's they're unjust laws. You know, this is actually the one of the things I like about this movie is that it feels genuinely rebellious at a time when even the re rebellion has to be tapered down and business like socially acceptable as much as possible, and that drives me up the wall. I'm running low on time, and there's a couple of things I definitely want to talk to you before we go because I could go on forever. But there's one thing you did in this movie that I think is really genius, and it's something that you know, my husband and I have talked about when we watch movies with trans characters is there's a really unfortunate way that a lot of filmmakers try to incorporate dead naming into their storytelling. How do we establish that this character is trans? Well, we'll start with someone dead naming them. No, that's not helping. That's not great. But what you do in this movie is you every time someone dead names the Joker, it's bleeped out until it's being used to hurt. And then it's not bleeped out, and it lands like an asteroid, just boom. Like it feels like such a betrayal. Even the audience knew to be on board with this. Where did that idea come from? Was that a conscious like decision to undermine some things, or can you tell me about that?
God, you know, I don't even really know, because it's, thank you for feeling like it's an effective thing, because that's definitely like what I wanted people to feel in that moment. Like I want people, when you finally hear her dead name, I wanted everybody who was cis just that was watching the movie to know what it feels like to get called your dead name by somebody who is just doing it to hurt you, because it is such a fucked up experience. And it, I don't know. Jesus, sorry. There's a huge cat fight happening.
Oh
Let me just
no.
close the door.
Okay.
It's more so just because it's distracting me.
Like that I just saw your
But
Batman Forever poster. You're walking the walk.
yeah. No, I can't be nothing but me. but yeah, I think the original idea was just like kind of what you said. Like I didn't want people's, you know, like there was a dead name in the script, and it was like part of the story is this character like rising above that name. And I definitely had an experience when I like of arriving at my name, like when I chose it and stuff, and I wanted to like do that in a way that felt abstract. And honestly, like, I think it kind of came from Kill Bill on some level. Like,
Oh yeah.
I mean, like, I don't know about Tarantino as a dude, but like, I love his movies so much. Like, really do. Like, I think like Kill Bill was like, it really got in there. Probably a few years after Batman Forever, where I was like, oh wow, cool, you can just do anything with movies. And I think Bleeping Beatrix Kiddo is probably where that's sort of where it felt like,
I
cinema
can see.
gave me permission to do that within this case.
I can see the influence, yeah, totally. And then there's one other, and it's a little thing, but it amused the hell out of me. So Robert Wool has a cameo via cameo explaining why he can't do a cameo via cameo.
Yes.
How did, at what point did you realize, oh, we could p literally just pay Robert Wool to give us a little performance real fast? Like, at what point did you at least try to pull, did you sincerely try to pull that out and he just came back, or how did that come together?
Yeah, I mean, originally it was just like so I got that cameo like a month before before TIFF. And it was like during this period where I was like pretty sure I wasn't gonna finish the movie in time. I could see it on my girlfriend's face too every day. Like, she was starting to wonder if I was gonna finish the movie in time. And I just kind of like got the idea because I was one of the many times in this process watching Batman 89, and like seeing him in Batman 89, I was just like, this guy is just like, I don't know, he feels like the 90s like movie dad in this way. Like, he's not a dad in a lot of movies, but like
Yeah.
I feel just so comforted whenever Robert Wool is on screen. Like, there's this, maybe it's his voice, maybe it's just his, and like, I mean, he's kind of a lovable sex pest in Batman 89, so I don't really know why it's that comforting, but like, he's amazing. And like, I found out he was on Cameo, and I was like, maybe I could ask him to be in the movie on Cameo. And at the very least, it would just be nice to have like a personalized message from this guy who is like one of my heroes and an actor that I've always wanted to work with. And his response was so perfect because he said, I can't legally do any of this. But, and then he gave me this whole fucking pep talk that, like, literally, I'm like getting choked up now thinking about it. It's like made me so, it came to me at such an important time. Like, I really needed that, like, pep talk of just him, basically just Robert Wool saying, like, yeah, queer coming of age Joker parody. Go for it. Like, why not? Like, that sounds fucking cool. Like, knock, kick those doors down. And then, yeah, I was like, I want to put this in the movie. So we did screen it a couple times with him, with him in the movie, and it always got a huge response. Like, people just go crazy when he pops up, especially like, 'cause he comes in at the end credits again, and that's where we hear like the nice encouraging message.
Right.
And like, I don't know, it's like gotten a standing ovation when we've screened it. But then, yeah, like, it reality kind of settled in, and I was like, I gotta like go back to him. And so I've since gone back to him, and I'm giving him a lot of money to do this, and he's cool with it. I think he doesn't feel too betrayed, and seems to like be really just like honestly genuinely proud of me for finishing it, and like, it again just feels cool. And I don't know, I was talking about this with somebody else last week, and it just like, it's cool when you find out like people like that are just like just even nice to trans people. Like, let alone like that encouraging. And I don't know, it just it warms my heart to think about. And I'm glad we got his permission, and that we can still just use this beautiful clip of him saying like, I can't legally be in this. And yeah, I assume all liability WB.
All right. Well, again, unfortunately, that is our time, but this has been really, really great. And thank you so much. And I admire the hell out of this movie. And I hope people go check it out because it's so rare to see someone doing something interesting with the superhero medium at all, let alone something deeply personal and challenging and
Thank
interesting.
you.
And just thank you. Thank you for that. So,
Thank
real
you. I
fast.
hope this was good.
I assure, unless the sound goes kaput on me, we're aces. So fingers crossed on that. Knocking on wood. But real fast. Is there? You say you're gonna get off of Twitter. Is there anything you want people to know, follow, a project you want them to be aware of in the future, anything like that before we go?
I mean, still follow me on Twitter, VeraDrew22. It's still very much my like mental toilet, so I'm still gonna and my like vehicle of self-promotion. So I'll still be posting content there. Just looking at it a lot less, and it's VeraDrew22 on Twitter and Instagram. I have a TikTok too, but I really don't know how to use it. Whenever I open that
I
app,
can't
I'm like,
figure it out
I'm
either.
somehow too old for this. I'm a
Everyone
lot
tells me,
older than
oh,
some
the
of those
people are
folks.
following critics on TikTok, and I'm like, really? Because I don't know what the hell that is. I'm past the point where I can learn new things. I'm just gonna have to accept that.
Same, yeah. And if you need to, if you want to see, because we are doing our theatrical run starting on April 5th at the IFC Center, and I'm going to be doing Q&As at a few of these shows. If you want to get tickets, we're playing like, I don't know, like 74 cities, like probably more on the way. Go to thepeoplesjoker.com and you can get your tickets right there.
Yeah, well, again, thank you for everything. The People's Joker is out this weekend, or if you're listening to this in the future, now, or if you're listening to this in the far future, it's probably streaming somewhere, so please check it out. And of course, thank you to everyone for listening. Please subscribe if you haven't already. If you're new, that'd be awesome. Thank you to all of our patrons over at patreon.com/criticallyacclaimednetwork. We can't do this without you. You're our heroes. And we hope you're enjoying all the exclusive stuff you have over there. And we're on social media at Critic Acclaim, because Critically Acclaimed was too long for social media. And I'm at William Bibbiani. So thank you, everybody. And never forget, everyone's a joker.
I wanna go to the midnight show. I'm sorry, what?